Hello, it's the Co-op. Rebecca Bratton Weiss here, along with Matthew Tyson. Matthew, how are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Agitated ideologically, as always.
Yeah.
In a good way, mm-hmm. and in a bad way, because that's kind of how we roll here.
Right.
I wanted to kind of start by swinging back to something we've been discussing last week,
mm-hmm.
And something that we both have been kind of returning to as an issue, and that's this whole sexual assault business with the not just the news from Hollywood, but just the news from everywhere.
Right.
This kind of massive campaign of speaking out on the part of women to let people be aware of just how widespread this problem is. And yeah, this is a pro-life issue. It's a pro-life issue because of the relation between sexual assault and abortion. And mm-hmm. it's also a pro-life issue because women shouldn't be sexually assaulted in the first place,
right.
period. So, and something I want to especially talk about, this is where I'm kind of, agitated in a bad way, is how unnerving it is to see the way people tried to shut this campaign down, like, because it was some kind of liberal thing,
mm-hmm.
as though speaking out against sexual assault is like this special liberal weirdo thing that we leftists do. I've seen the usual victim blaming, like people saying, well, why were those women going off with this man when they knew who he was? And then there's this idea that by speaking out against sexual assault, women were somehow attacking men, even though simply saying me too doesn't say anything about men at all.
Right.
I mean, you could say me too if you'd been assaulted by another woman.
Right.
I saw men saying it. I don't know. I mean, I should... This is one of these cases where it's so important to have men and women talking together.
Right.
A lot of men seemed to be bothered by this, and a lot of women seemed to be bothered on behalf of the men in their lives, as though the men in their lives were being attacked. But what's your take on that whole business there?
Whenever you have these instances of some sort of, like we did with the Women's March, and like we do with pretty much any time that you have these
right.
women standing up for pretty much anything, there's a group of men that are always going to get angry about it. And it's the same type of mentality where people, whenever you want to talk about issues that affect black people in this country, white people just for some reason get really upset about that because you're not talking about
right.
two or it's a very privileged thing, and it's a very ridiculous thing in a lot of ways. But one of the things I did see that was interesting to me, and that I wanted to I really wanted to kind of put out there and talk about, is that while you had these group of men who were just generally angry at the fact that women were speaking up for something or anything, you also had
speaking at all,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly. You had this other group of men and not as many, but who I think felt frustrated and almost like excluded, because these were men who had also been sexually assaulted by someone. I don't mean like
right.
as adults too, and some by women and some by other men, and that is an issue that has to get brought up, that doesn't get brought up enough. When we talk about these issues of sexual assault, it deals with women mostly because it's a problem that absolutely overwhelmingly and disproportionately affects women, but you also
right.
you do have these men who find themselves being sexually assaulted as well, and because of this issue of the same toxic masculinity that lends itself to the creation of rape culture and this prevalence of sexual assault among men towards women, it's the same thing that keeps these other men who have been sexually assaulted from speaking out about it, from telling anyone. They internalize it. It eats them away, and it can be extremely emotionally damaging and even cause them to lash out in other violent or abusive ways. And so I guess that
right.
it's always such a sticky situation, because you have this group of men that are just angry that women are standing up for themselves, but you have this other group of men that I think in a lot of ways may, at least from a rhetorical standpoint, from what they're seeing on social media, feel as if they're being you know, not included in this. And so how do you talk mm-hmm. about these men who feel this way, and how do you encourage them to speak out or get help, while at the same time not taking away from the fact that even considering this group of men, this is still a problem that overwhelmingly affects women, and not detracting from that, right. taking away from the fact that it is primarily a woman-centric issue. I mean, how do you balance those two?
Yeah, it's funny because you know, while I was wasting time on Facebook, as I do, I saw a broad array of responses along those lines, and I would categorize them like maybe kind of in several different parts. There were a lot of men who were joining in on the campaign, and I think a lot of times these were men who had, you know, strong female friendships, a strong community of feminists who had made it able for them to be to feel safe right. speaking out, which is ironic because we feminists are supposed to be the man haters, but we are the ones who are usually trying to raise awareness about sexual assault and the danger of toxic masculinity culture in general. So that was actually kind of, you know, a painful but beautiful moment of solidarity when men would come out and say, you know, me too, and mm-hmm. You know, we're all kind of in this together. And so that was great. And then there were also very thoughtful posts that kind of, you know, echo what you just said, that yes, this is something that affects women disproportionately. Women are kind of across the board more likely to be victims of sexual mm-hmm. assault, and that's not a new thing. You know, that's why the Trojan War was fought. That's why David's regime in the Old Testament was nearly brought down, in both cases because a man decided to just do what he wanted with a woman. Mm-hmm. And
Robert
then the focus
Trebellion.
Ends up not being... Yeah, yes, exactly. George R. R. Martin is always relevant. Yeah, and so the focus then ends up not being what was done to the woman, but all of the men fighting over it. Right. The woman, you know, gets kind of forgotten in the background. So... this recognizing that it affects women proportionally, but also recognizing that men are victims too, mm-hmm. it's not something that bothers me as a woman. It's not like, oh, you know, let me keep my victimhood for myself. Mm-hmm. But then I saw people who were bringing it up just like the red herring thing. It's like when you bring up Black Lives Matter,
right.
and someone's like, well, Black Lives Matter is helping this group, so they must not really care. Or,
right.
oh, well, you're trying to do something about that injustice, but you're not paying attention to this group over here. And this always comes from someone who had never before expressed interest in this injustice. It's like they magically... became interested in injustice A only to undermine the efforts of people who are trying to deal with injustice B. And I'm like, look, dude, we're intersectional. We're concerned about all of it. So, you know, bringing up A doesn't discredit B.
Right.
It just means that, you know, there's more that we have to take on. And that, it's like, you know, the red herring thing seems to be a really popular method for right-wingers mm-hmm. to try to shut down any efforts at social justice.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we see that so often, and it makes it harder for us to accept when people say, what about the men who are victims in a genuine way?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I want to say, too, that, you know, it's important to understand that when we talk about this disproportionately affecting women, we don't just mean in actual instances, but we mean in general. I mean, as a like as a guy, even though that sexual assault happens to men, and, you know, rape happens to men, and it happens, still don't ever like fear it. You know what I mean? Like, it's
right.
not something that
right.
that I walk around like on my mind ever. It's not something that I'm never in a situation where I'm like, I hope I don't get raped. Like that thought never crosses my mind ever.
Right.
And so I think that's something else
yeah.
that we really have to
yeah.
take into consideration here when we're talking about these men who have experienced these issues. The thing you talked about earlier about the red herring too is it's funny you mentioned that, because this this, well, we record this on a Monday, so it's Monday we're recording this, and this morning I was actually on a right-wing radio station here in Alabama for an article I wrote for a publication, and it was one of the first things, we were talking about abortion and being a pro-life liberal and a pro-life Democrat, and of course, you know, like the first thing they turn to is they immediately throw out the issue of like, well, how can you support Democrats when they support partial birth abortion, because they say they don't support, you know, and, and it's very different from the reality of it, I think, but you know, it is a tactic that gets thrown out, and it's a tactic that stops us from having important conversations, and like you said, we're intersectional, and it's something that it's an approach that I'm glad that we take, because like we said, you know, in all these past episodes, these are, you know, conversations we need to be having.
Yeah, like the red herring thing. And yeah, I'm going to keep talking about it because I've been seeing it so often. Mm-hmm. One of the things that it does is it creates discord when there wasn't any. It is not a situation in which, for the most part, women were speaking up in order to attack men or specifically determined to exclude men. Mm-hmm. It was not about men, I guess I could say. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not deliberately exclusive, but more just, look, this isn't about you right now.
Right.
But then, through that, these really incredible dialogues started happening in which men were involved, and that did allow men to feel that they could speak out. Men were saying, you know, I didn't realize this was so much of a problem. Men were apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
Men were saying, me too. So I would have to say, for the most part, there was not any, you know, man-hating or man-bashing going on, but then these people who were kind of attacking the campaign, it was like they were trying to get us to fight.
Right.
Like they were trying to create a sex war by saying that there was one. And that's what's really disturbing to me, that it's like they're trying to shut down something. It's not a liberal thing. It's not a leftist thing.
Right.
You know, opposing sexual assault should be just a human thing.
Exactly.
Male, female, Catholic, pro-life, pro-choice, whatever. So yeah, it's pretty frustrating. Absolutely.
I think it's interesting to me how, you know, when you talk about how this shouldn't be a leftist thing, but it sort of somehow became a leftist thing, you know, there are all these real weird code words, especially amongst the people on the alt-right, where we tend to have this issue more often. You see a lot of these alt-right people popping up against all these things. But it seems, you know, all these code words, like, you know, like you said, sexual assault shouldn't be a leftist idea. It should just be a human thing. But at the same time, you know, when we start talking about sexual assault, feminism and standing up for, you know, just all women's rights, that's, you know, it's becoming sort of like this code word for like liberal and leftism. And that's been something that's, you know, that's been a ploy for a long time, you know, coming with code words for these, you know, these people. And so I think that's why it gets bogged down like that, because we kind of have, over the years, we kind of have made all these issues that should be human issues, we've made them into these leftist issues, you know, which it shouldn't be. You know, we see women's rights now is like code word for like leftist politics and liberal politics,
even
though it should be something that benefits all women. It's the same issue we have with like racism these days. Like that for the longest time, you know, we've almost tried to flip that around. And if you talk about, you know, civil rights and wanting to combat racism, that's becoming more of a, and it has been for a long time, a leftist liberal thing, you know, because we don't want to talk about sexual assault because it's not a problem. We don't want to talk about racism because it's not a problem, you know, and they want to believe this, you know, ridiculous idea, but it's almost become like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, you know, these are issues that affect everybody. You know, this shouldn't be a left-right thing, and yet it's being forced into that kind of thing. And suddenly if you stand up for sexual assault, suddenly that's a leftist thing. If you're standing up against racism, that's a leftist thing. And it's kind of been shoehorned into that. And I think that's to me, that's very interesting. And to me, that's very telling of, and I think kind of kind of supports this idea that, you know, that these issues of racism and these issues of, you know, these people who are always opposing these women's rights movements and things always happen to come from the right. I don't know. It's interesting. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it really is a leftist issue, then shame on you for being on the right. Like,
right?
I wrote a thing earlier, like, opposing anti-Semitism is not some weird leftist thing. Like, going in and standing up against the Nazis who are marching in the streets in our cities is not this, like, weirdo, ooh, leftists just as bad. No, this is a side you should be on, and if you're not on this side, I'm not sure I want to have drinks with you anymore.
Right.
You know, because these are the... This is not two different views. This is not, like, we can agree to disagree. This is one side wants to kill me and the other doesn't. This is
right.
One side thinks rape is funny and the other doesn't. One side thinks it's not a big deal that a vast number of people were forcibly subjugated, and the other side thinks that it's terrible. So, you know, if it's a leftist issue, then yeah, I'm a leftist.
It
shouldn't be a leftist issue, but maybe it's not so much about leftism being so great as it is about the right wing in America today being something that's actually pretty bad.
Well, I'm saying, if all the things that you know are being considered leftist or whatever, all the, you know, standing up for women's rights, standing up for fighting racism, were issues that the right was espousing, I would be on the right. Like, I'm not
right.
My it's not determined by these polls that we set up for each other. It's just I look into things and say, okay, so who are the people that I feel like are actually contributing to the goodwill of the people who want to do good justice for people? Well, to me, that's overwhelmingly a liberal thing. Yes, a lot of times liberals support abortion, but that's with 99% of the other issues that just kind of happens to be where things go. And, you know, and speaking of that, we talk about all these issues being leftist issues and all these, you know, being, you know, involved with the new pro-life movement and all these sort of progressive and left of pro-life, you know, movements that are kind of popping up all over the place that deal with issues of racism and feminism and LGBT rights, but are also, like, you know, a part of this, part of the pro-life movement. That was a lot of what you did this past weekend, right, up in Pittsburgh, like,
yes.
this conference you went
yes.
to?
Yes, yes, it was so great. Like, I mean, part of it was great psychologically to be, you know, with my people. This was a conference that was organized by Rehumanize International, which is an excellent organization. If you're not familiar with them, check them out. They have really great resources. And it was called the Life, Peace, Justice Conference. So, you know, like, secular pro-life was there, Pro-Life Alliance of Gays and Lesbians, Pro-Life Feminists, all of these people with wonderful resources to share. And that was the other part of it that was great, was that it was a learning experience for me. And I wanted to share especially one presentation I went to was on racism in healthcare, and that was incredibly eye-opening. You know, I consider myself to be a fairly woke person, but in the course of that hour, my eyes were kind of bugging out of my head because I hadn't looked at it in those terms before. Mm-hmm. Like, the extent to which systemic racism affects women of color just in every aspect of their lives, and how we can't ignore the reality of a racist tradition, like, I mean, a hardcore racist tradition. Like, what does it mean if our country was built on slavery? What does it mean that these people had their families torn apart? I mean, weren't even allowed to have families generation after generation after generation, and then they're, you know, given no support whatsoever, treated with suspicion, and then some, you know, white guy in a middle-class neighborhood says, "Oh, well, why can't they make more responsible choices?" Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, screw you. Shut up. So I... although I don't say screw you, I use more forceful language.
Yeah.
And so I shared some of the material from this presentation by Cecily Smith. She's a doula, a black doula out of Texas, and she was talking about how, like, black women have so few resources for childbirthing, and how the infant mortality and the maternal mortality rate is so high for a number of reasons. So I shared this, and one of the most important things I got out of this was just that the pro-life movement needs to, as Cecily Smith said, center women of color. Women of color need to be taking the lead in this discussion. And I said this on a Facebook post, and a guy disagreed with me, and he said, "No, you're wrong." And it was like, hello, mansplaining and whitesplaining overdose.
Oh, a big package.
He was like, yeah, well, maybe, exactly, a package of wrongness. And he said, well, you know, maybe it's a good rhetorical point to make them our spokesperson. So he's basically saying, yeah, we should tokenize black women. Mm-hmm. Basically saying, we white men call the shots, but occasionally we'll tokenize a black woman to make it look as though we care. And I just, my mind was kind of blown. That's what we're up against.
Yeah.
That level of overt disdain for black women from people who claim to be pro-life. I think that's horrifying.
And I'll say this too. You know, one thing that you mentioned earlier about that being such an eye-opening experience, and you just learning how further down the, you know, how systemic this issue really is, to get to the point to where, like our country was built on racism.
Right.
It was a foundational principle.
Yes.
And I'll say as a quick note, I think that's why people feel so threatened by the idea of racial equality,
yeah.
Because of the fact that if you really want to follow it to its logical end, it's actually going to, I think, require a significant restructuring of society in some sort of manner.
Mm-hmm.
An entire society has been built off of racism. So in order for us to have some sort of truly equal situation, we're going to have a serious restructuring. And that idea, that serious restructuring, is a threat, especially to those who hold a conservative mindset. And that's, I think, why you have these issues. But I'll say this, too. One of the things that, and I wrote a blog about this last year, that was kind of eye-opening to me when we talk about the idea of how systemic and how deeply ingrained racism really is. You have a lot of white people out there who really, truly, honestly don't realize that their entire lives they have been taught to look at black people differently. And
right.
I didn't realize it for a long time. And you got to understand that people who are coming out of this, it's very difficult for white people to grasp this idea. Because I'll tell you, and this is why. Because when we go through the educational system, we are taught about racism as a thing of the past. We're taught about racism in history class. We talk about the horrible evils of slavery and the heroes of abolition and the hero that Abraham Lincoln was, and we talk about
the white heroes always.
Exactly, of course. But then we talk about, you know, the civil rights movement, and we talk about Martin Luther King and all this great stuff. And we come to understand racism as something that is a thing of the past, and we come to the only people who are really racist are the really, really bad ones, you know, the KKK guys,
right,
and the neo-Nazis,
yeah.
And we're taught to say, look, real racism is a thing of the past. These people out here who are still spouting this crazy racist Nazi KKK stuff, that's just a minority of people, you know, they don't have any real power, and they're bad, yeah, obviously, we obviously hate them, but that's it. We're taught to look at the issues of race in that perspective, as if it's something that happened a long time ago, something that's not an issue anymore. And so then, when we go out to the world and we see black people struggling, we hear about black people, you know, protesting because they're tired of being shot, you know, by the police. The gut instinct at that point is to go, wait, hold on, no, this has to be wrong because racism is a thing of the past. There must just be something wrong with these black people, and that's how, because they have their civil rights, they have their right to vote, blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
White people are conditioned to look at race this way. And that's why it's so hard to break through that divide, and it takes a lot to get people to understand that we went through our entire lives being taught as racism is something that was that was a thing in the past, and we have to we have to break beyond that, and it's very important that we do that.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, everyone also has been taught to say racism is bad. It's
right,
it's,
exactly.
And we know that if you start by saying I'm not a racist, but you're about to say something racist.
Absolutely.
But I think it's it can be more subtle than that. That people will say, I oppose racism. People will say, like, oh, you know, I love the Jews. The Jews are wonderful. Anti-Semitism is terrible. Oh, or I love my black brothers and sisters.
Right.
And that is sometimes an unintentional cover for attitudes that perpetuate these systemic forms of racism. So I feel like kind of my role as a white ally is to engage in these cases as patiently as possible, because I can't ask people of color to be patient.
Exactly.
Like, they've been patient their entire lives. The people who have been dealing with this injustice every single day, it's totally understandable if they see this kind of, you know, unconscious, well-meaning racism from middle-class white people, that they do respond with rage.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that more white people would understand that, if that we've been so sheltered. And, you know, I grew up dirt poor. I didn't have running water. You know, all kinds of bad things happened to me, but I always had my white privilege to get me by.
Exactly.
And it's amazing what you can do with that. And when you don't have that, it's not my job to tell people of color, now calm down, now try to engage this racist in dialogue. No, that's not my job. My job is to be the one who can engage the racist in dialogue, because honestly, I was that racist once.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was there once, and somehow or other it worked out that I did listen when people spoke, and I understood that I should not be resentful when being called out on my privilege. I should use my privilege to make sure that others have the same privilege, basically. Not hoard it all for myself. So, yeah, I mean, I hope I lose my temper with anti-Semites very quickly, but I do hope that there's some way we can engage more and more people to, you know, reject the sin of racism.
Right.
Part of our baptismal promises, it should maybe.
Well, you know, there's similarities between these issues with racism and the way that white people are raised, and the way that, you know, and the sexual assault issues and the way that men are raised. I mean, you know, in the same way white people are systemically conditioned to see, to see race in a certain lens, through this historical lens. You know, men in a lot of ways, maybe not so formally in a lot of situations, but are certainly, through, like we said, with this toxic masculine culture, taught to, you know, approach life a particular way, or to approach women a particular way, and that's when, you know, when people speak out against things like, you know, even the humorous aspects, the rape jokes and the, you know, and the sexist jokes and things like that. It's, you know, it's not because people are trying to police speech. It's not because people are too sensitive or because we're too politically correct. It's because if we're going to do something about these issues, those are the kind of things that we have to cut it off at those roots.
Right.
And same goes for racist jokes and things like that, too. You have to cut those things off at the roots, because when you're conditioned your entire life to believe a certain way, and then you turn around and you make these humorous remarks about issues of sexism and issues of sexual assault and issues of racism, and then when someone goes, hey man, you shouldn't do that, you find yourself with this freedom or this privilege to say, no, that's my freedom of speech, we're just kidding, obviously we don't really support rapists, real rapists, we don't support real racists, you know, because there's always a real type of rape out there, and there's a real type of racist out there, and that's the kind of thing that allows these problems to continue on and to be systemic and to, to go unresolved. Is the fact that we don't dig down into the minutia. We don't actually believe women. We don't actually believe black people, and that is a major problem.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So there's our intersectionality again, that understanding the way injustice works in one area can really help us understand how injustice works in the other. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that that was is probably one of our I don't want to say heavier, but there was a lot of
we were preachy.
Trying to cover all that deep stuff, and yeah, a little preachy, but we need to continue these to talk about these issues because they can be very eye opening for those that find a way to listen, and eventually some people do listen. Eventually some people do have a change of heart, and mm-hmm. you just have to keep pressing that message because you've got to get through to them one way or the other. But at the same time, we do feel like all these things still contribute back to the concept of being pro-life, because you've got to, if you're going to be pro-life, you've got to understand that the right to life, and the right to life is an equal thing. All people have the same right to life. Women have the same right to life as men. Black people have the same right to life as white people, and there's no room for sexism, and there's no room for racism in a pro-life movement. You can't have it. It can't be there, and so that's why we are very dedicated, as the new pro-life movement and the show too, to doing our best to shun these things and to work towards a movement that completely eliminates these horrible anti-life ideas. And so so thank you for tuning in.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening, as always. Great. And we'll see you next time. Yeah.